I want you to imagine something. Imagine that you were among the people in Galilee where Jesus taught in the first century. You, like most of your friends, had heard about the teacher whose father was the carpenter in Nazareth, Jesus. Every time you heard people talk about him, it stirred something inside of you that you would very much like to come awake more. It was almost as if every time someone spoke of him, your soul was beginning to wake up. And so you, like so many of the people you knew, you decided to make the trek from where you were to where he was because you wanted to see him. You wanted to be near him. And most importantly, you wanted to hear what he had to say. Imagine that you were there that day when Jesus stood in the valley, and then he turned his back to you and everyone, and he began to climb up that mountain. Word spread in the crowd, he's going up there to teach. And so you and everyone else who really wanted to hear what he had to say, you also decided to climb. And it wasn't easy, it took work. You went up, and with every step, your heart was more and more filled with hope because just the thought of him made you feel more courageous, more alive. And so you climbed to the top of the mountain. And then when you got to the top, he sat down. Everyone was silent. And you were all quiet because you wanted to hear. You needed to hear what he would say. And then he began to talk. His words, they were like water in the desert. They were so comforting and at the same time so disruptive. They were challenging and totally heartwarming. They made you filled with hope and they frightened you at the same time. They were sincere. They were true. They were good. And you listened and he spoke for a long time. It didn't seem like it lasted for a long time, but it did. He went on, and as he spoke and his words were unfolded for you, you were there and you were alive and you listened. And then he got to that point that all preachers get to where he paused and you knew he was about to end. Do you know what I'm talking about when the preacher gets to that point? You know what I mean? Like it depends. Sometimes the preacher like gets this very courageous look and starts talking in a different tone. Do you know what I mean? Some churches, they have music behind the fellow that starts, that sentimental piano music. That doesn't work. Or sometimes the preacher just starts repeating himself over and over. You know what I mean? Like he's circling, looking for somewhere to land. Let me just tell you, I know this because I've heard preachers do this. Sometimes, every time the preacher is doing this, in the preacher's head is this, oh my gosh, how am I going to finish? I'm serious. But that wasn't what it was for Jesus. Not at all. You didn't want him to stop, but he was going to. And there he was on the top of that mountain, and he was about to end, and he had no question that he needed to leave those listeners with one final thing. One last word at the end of this great teaching of his. And that's what I want you to listen to now. There was a day when all of what I've just described happened. There were a group of people who climbed a mountain to listen to him. He talked for a long time, and when he was done, he had one last thing to say. Some of you know, all summer long, we've been listening to the things that Jesus said. This is the last Sunday of the summer. And so this will be the last time we spend listening to his words in this series. We'll listen again, but this will be the end. And so this morning, I've chosen the very last thing he said in the greatest block of his teaching in Matthew. It's in chapter 7. It starts on verse 24, it goes to 27. Imagine now, you're there, and he's done with his great teaching, and after a pause, these are the last words he chooses to say. Listen to these. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on sand. the rain fell, and the floods came, and the wind blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was its fall. Jesus ends his longest continuous block of teaching in Scripture with this picture. It is a picture of contrast. It's a simple image in which one house stands and the other falls. The main thrust of what he means to present in this lesson of his is a message of contrast. Like so many of the stories Jesus told, there are two things which are very different. If you know his teaching, you know he spoke of two trees, one that bore good fruit and the other that had no fruit and was cut down and thrown into the fire. He spoke of two roads, one road that was wide and easy, and many entered through it, and another road that was narrow, and only a few followed that one. One led to death and the other life. He spoke of banquets, where some were dressed in their robes and others had the wrong clothing, and some were welcomed with rejoicing and others were cast out where there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. He spoke of wedding banquets where some attendants had their oil prepared and they were welcomed in with rejoicing, but others, they were not prepared and they were shut out. There was a story of sheep and goats, some who cared for the needy and others who didn't. Some went to glory and others went to fire. And there is this story here of contrast. One house stands and the other house falls. And in this contrast of his, there's a lesson that is of life and death significance for us and for all who heard him on that morning. Before we see the contrast, I hope this morning that we'll look clearly at what this contrast means to teach us. Before we look at it, we must see that in this story there are similarities which also have something to teach us. I want to begin with the similarities before we look at the contrasts, because they have wisdom in them that are, the wisdom that's hidden in these similarities is also good. So let's look at what Jesus presented here at the end of his teaching. First, at what it is that's the same about these two houses, and see what we can learn. First, these two houses in this story of Jesus, they were both built by people who heard Jesus' words. That may seem insignificant. We may skip over that as we read, but if we miss it, we will miss the opportunity to be addressed by this ourselves. Let me tell you why. In all of the contrast stories that Jesus tells, which side do you want to be on? Right? You want to be the one whose house stands. You want to be on the good road. You want to be on the right side. You want to be in the banquet. And it's so easy for us when we hear these stories to think that what they're showing us is the difference between people on the one hand who hear Jesus and then all the other people on the other hand who do not hear him. We would like very much to hear this story and think, okay, the one whose house stands, that's the person who hears what he says, like all of us gathered in this theater this morning who've come to listen. And everyone else who doesn't hear Jesus and who doesn't listen to him, oh, they're the ones who have to be afraid because they're the ones whose houses will fall down. But do you notice, and this is a very important first similarity, both people in this story are people who heard Jesus. He is talking to a large group of people who did a lot of work to get to where he was, to listen. They'd climbed a mountain, for God's sake. And he tells a story to these folks, all of whom are listening. And in his first picture here, in this picture, there is not a contrast between people on the one hand who hear Jesus and on the other who don't hear, but between two different kinds of listeners. And that means that not one of us in here this morning is ready to hear what Jesus has to say if we simply think, well, we're the ones who are listening because here we are in church, and so we don't need to worry. Now, I didn't decide to pick a sermon that would make you worry, but we must listen knowing that here we're hearing a contrast between two different kind of listeners. That's the first similarity, and it's an important one. There's a second similarity I want us to dwell on for a moment, and it's this: that Jesus chooses to picture those who listen to him as home builders, as people who are building the dwellings that they live in. I imagine it's true that very few of us here have built the houses that we currently live in. Are there any who have? I know we have one fellow who manages a company that builds houses. Did you build your own house? No. I want you to dwell on this image for a moment, the image of a person building a home. Try your very best to bring yourself back to the first century where there aren't bulldozers and there's not heavy machinery and so on. When a man sets out to build a house, he makes a choice, and then he has to organize all of his efforts at putting that home together, and then begins the long, slow, and continuous process of one small decision after another over a long period of time that eventually leads to a home to live in. There's absolutely no question that in this time, it wasn't such that a person decided to build a home and then, pow, they had a home to live in. No, they made a choice, they selected a piece of land, and then they got about the long and continuous process of one small decision after another that all added up over time to the dwelling that they lived in. Now, do you see how fitting this metaphor is for life? Think of it for a bit. Jesus is not just talking about homes here. He's talking about life. And what he wants those first listeners to know, and he wants us to know it as well, listen to this. You end up constructing the life that you live in by the many little choices you make all along the way. Oh, they seem insignificant, one after the other. They seem small. They don't seem like they're the decision that determines life. And probably we would like very much to just have to make one choice and then we have our life. But that's not how it goes, not back then or today. The very things you choose day after day, the choices you make about how to respond to the people around you, the decisions you make of what thoughts to entertain inside of your head, the things you choose to dream about or think of, and you do choose, you may not think you do, the way you choose to use every second you have. Oh, you're going to tell people around you, oh, I would like to do that, but I don't have time. That's not true. You have as much time as everyone does. It's just what you choose to do with it. Oh, I would love to spend time with you, you might say to somebody, but you choose not to because you want to do something else. And over and again, you'll trick yourself into thinking that you have no power to determine the shape of your existence, but that's not so. Like a man who builds his home little by little, day after day, we are people who construct the dwellings that we inhabit, these lives that we end up experiencing and many times wrongly think have been pressed upon us. Jesus wanted those listeners to know. And here's the very important point now. And this is, I can say this because Jesus was talking to people who had listened to him. And I'm speaking to you, assuming that you yourself have heard what he said. Some of you may not have. But those of you who have heard Jesus' words, it's not just any arbitrary decisions that Jesus is speaking about, but he's talking about the choices that you and I make with respect to the things that he spoke of. A lot of folks don't know this, but Jesus talked about everyday, ordinary things. He spoke about human relationships, the kinds that you and I live day in and day out. He talked about things, possessions, clothing, food, jobs, strangers, neighbors. He talked about ordinary things of life. And what he means to say here is the decisions that you make, the ones that seem little, about the things that I speak of, they have an enormous impact on the shape that your life will take. They'll make all the difference. They'll make all the difference, in fact, in an ultimate sense, what you choose. That's a second similarity in this story. Now, I'm tempted to hurry on to the contrast, but there's one more similarity that we must pause on because it saves us from a deadly misunderstanding. One other thing about these two homes that's exactly the same. Unlike those other two similarities, this one is linguistically built in. The words that describe these two homes in this last respect are exactly the same. Did you see what they were? This is important. Verse 25 and verse 27 begin with exactly the same words. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house. Which house? Both. The rain fell on both houses. The floods came up against both houses. The winds blew and beat on both of the two houses. And there's no question that many of us would like to believe that if we become hearers of Jesus' words, who then begin to do what he says, there will be no more rain on our house. The floods will not come near where we are, and the winds won't blow and beat against the dwellings that we construct in our lives. But this truth here, which may be unwelcome, is important for every mature adult to acknowledge and accept, and it is that following Jesus is not an amulet that protects you from challenges in life. Thank you. It's not. We may like it to be so. The truth is, I believe if we found it to be true, we would wish it were otherwise, because it is so, and this is such a hard thing to say, but I believe it. The storms of life shape us. They make us into the people we're meant to be. And there are storms, and they're serious. They're not easy things that impinge upon us. And many of you, as I speak, you are holding those storms at bay even as I talk. I mean storms like this. You had a friend you depended on, and that friend's gone. Even now you sit beside someone who is other than the one you wished you would be sitting beside, because the person you loved is gone. They died. Some of you have had to live with the regrets of repeated failures that you yourself have caused, and now you are a person who's just so wallowing in the pit. You tried to do the right thing, but people spoke badly of you, and now you have to live with a bad reputation. It's all lies. The storms that life brings upon people who are living are just tragic. And the message in this scene that Jesus paints, this picture, is that those who hear and listen must understand that this life will have storms, whether you listen to him and do what he says, or whether you listen to him and choose not to. Both houses are impinged upon by these unwelcome circumstances of life. You know, I had originally planned to preach this sermon last Sunday, and I didn't pick it the week before. It was at the beginning of the summer. So from the start of the summer, the plan was to preach this sermon about storms and houses on the Sunday that was canceled because of a storm. I don't want to read too much into that, but I kind of want to, like a little bit. This story that Jesus tells, this picture that he paints, listen now, it is for our good. All of the things that Jesus said are for our good. The things that are easy and that we would love to hear, including the things that are difficult and that we would like rather not to hear, all of the things this man Jesus said are for our own good. That is the reason why this summer I thought it would be best for us to listen to him week after week. This story is no different. He paints this picture for our own good. He loves us. He loves you more than you could possibly imagine, or you would dare to dream or hope. If you could get to the very bottom of you and open up your soul and that little part of you that says all those things to you in your darkest hours, the part of you that is a voice that says things that make you want to give up, Jesus would say to you, "No, no, that's not true. I love you. You're so valuable. You mean the world to me." And that is what's behind his teaching at every word that he speaks, including this one, this story of contrast. Now, what is the contrast? What is the heart of what he's saying here? It's simple. I'm almost embarrassed as a preacher. I wish I had something more clever to close up this series with, but I don't. Following Jesus here, the contrast is that one house fell down and the other didn't. Yes, it's true that there's no difference in what comes upon each house. There's no difference in what comes upon each life, whether we follow Jesus or not. But there is a difference in the outcome, and the outcome is that one falls to the ground and the other stands after the storm is gone. And Jesus, again, is not talking about houses, he's talking about lives. And what he means for us to know is that every life that will be impinged upon by storms, some of those lives will fall to the ground, they'll be washed away, they'll be altogether ruined and utterly devastated, while others stand and remain. And I must add this. We see this in this contrast story, maybe not so directly, but in the other contrast stories that Jesus mentioned, or Jesus presented, that I mentioned earlier. Do you know the ultimate contrast he's speaking of is the judgment, the final judgment before God the Father? He spoke about that a lot, Jesus did. He pictured us standing before the final judgment, and what he wanted us to know is that there will be, in this great storm of judgment before God, as we all stand there will be a storm, and it will wipe away, and it will wash away so much. And for some folks, that judgment storm will end them. And others will stand. That's what Jesus said over and over again. And so that raises the question, well, what's the difference? What does it all boil down to? And this, again, is so simple a child could understand it, a very young child even. And here I feel that I should have something more clever to say, but I don't. The difference between these two is very simple. One of the people heard what Jesus said and did what he said, and the other heard what he said and didn't. The house that stood was the man who heard what Jesus said. It was the woman who heard the words that Jesus spoke, and she did what she heard. She's called wise, and her house will stand. But then the one whose house is utterly ruined is the one who heard what Jesus said but didn't do it, chose not to do what Jesus said. And that one is called a fool, and her house will be washed away. His house will be no more. It will be obliterated. Have you ever seen the man who hears Jesus' words and does it? He's the man who does good things, and when other people see it, they think more highly of God because of this man. He's the one who says yes and means it. He says no and he means it. You could trust his word. He's the one who, when he gets in a fight with someone in his family or in church, he is so bent out of shape over that lack of togetherness that he'll do anything he can to make things right, even skip church to settle things with that other person. He's the one who takes his marriage with the seriousness that it deserves. He keeps himself pure when it comes to sexual things. And he's so serious about this that he won't even look lustfully at a woman. And if his computer causes him to stumble, he throws it away and he cancels his internet service. He's the one who meets evil with good. When someone asks him to share and he has enough, he gives it to them. When someone asks him for what's unreasonable, he gives it to them and gives even more. He's the person who is there when another is hurting just so he can listen. Every time he's confronted with evil, he does not fight back with violence, but instead returns it with good. Sometimes this fellow is not available to hang out with his friends, and the reason is that he's off alone praying for his enemies. He'd never tell them that. He never uses his religion or his relationship with Jesus to show off. This fellow gives money at church. He takes care of others and prays. He fasts, but he always does it in secret. No one knows. Do you know what he does when he does something wrong? He doesn't try to hide it. He confesses it and asks for forgiveness. He comes before God like a little child before a father, opening his heart to God. He doesn't hide or pretend he's better than he is. He says, God, I'm a mess. Please forgive me. He asks for things. He seeks with all of his heart what God would want. The treasure that drives him in life is not the same thing that drives everyone else. He's after the things that God values. People want to be around him because when they are, they feel closer to God. Have you ever seen someone like this? This is a person who hears what Jesus says and does it. You know what the fellow who hears what Jesus says and doesn't do it is like? There's a Greek word for him. He's called a hypocrite. That means an actor. He's pretend. He's fake. You can't trust him. He says one thing, but maybe he doesn't mean it. He remembers every time someone in the church has done something wrong and he bears a grudge. He has no problem going to worship while hating the person right beside him. He feels righteous when he does it. He's greedy. He doesn't share the things that he has. He has endless excuses for why he can't give all that he wishes he could give. He has good rationalizations for why he won't be around those other people because they're sinners and he doesn't want to ruin his own righteousness, etc. He's a liar. He cares about his marriage as long as it's good for him, but once it gets hard, maybe he'll give up. He rationalizes that I can look, as long as I'm not hurting anyone. Nobody knows. I can do this in private with my eyes, and it won't hurt anyone. Oh, he's very good at rationalizing. He makes sure that the people around him know all the good things that he's doing, especially Christian things, because he wants them to praise him. He worries a lot. He's afraid. He can't be secure in the present. When he thinks about the future, he's anxious. He doesn't trust God. He's alone, even when he's in a crowd of people. He's pretending all the time. That's the man who hears what Jesus says and doesn't do it. The message in this last story of Jesus, in this final saying of his in this great sermon, is so plain, it's crazy. If you hear what Jesus says and you do it, when the storms of life break upon you, when the ultimate storm comes before each one of us, your house will stand. But if you do not listen, your house will be blown away. I've been thinking about this sermon all summer. And there was one thought that made me uncomfortable in presenting it. And I want to tell it to you, and it's a serious thought. It makes me uncomfortable, and I'll tell you what it is. It's this idea that presenting Jesus' words here as clearly as I could would leave some of us, maybe even many of us, thinking that I better do what Jesus says or else God won't love me. I better make sure I keep a list of all the things this fellow Jesus says. And then I better behave myself, because if I don't, that's it for me. But on the other hand, if I do good, then I'm going to be okay. Now listen, do you see how easy it would be to take that message away from what Jesus said here? I mean, it's not because I like that message that I just said. It's because when Jesus talks about these two houses, it sounds an awful lot like that's what he's saying. And this is one of those truths that's like a mountaintop ridge that you have to walk across. Any hikers in here? No? There's one. Imagine that you're on a mountaintop and then you have to traverse to another one, and there's nothing but a very narrow razor-like ridge between the two. If you step on one side, you're going to fall, and if you step on the other, you're going to fall as well. That's what this is like, this difficulty I'm talking about, because it would be wrong for me to say to you, well, no, it's not like that. You're saved by grace. It doesn't matter what you do, because then I would be, well, I think I'd be in conflict with this fellow Jesus, who seems to say it matters quite a bit what you do. Do you see that? The thing is, his whole life, Jesus' whole life says, I don't love you because of what you've done. I love you because of what I've decided to do. And now you must hear me. Please listen to this. Jesus Christ loves you because of what he has decided about you, not because of what you have decided to do with what he said. He doesn't care deeply for you and value you simply because he thinks you're going to do what he asked you to do. He loves you despite the fact that he knows you're going to fail over and over again. That's who he is. He comes in grace, and his grace is to come to sinners like you and me, people who don't listen, who hear what he says and then don't listen. He comes to people like us to give himself for us, to lay his life down for us. He died for us. He died for us knowing that we'd fail repeatedly. Now, if you take that to mean, well, it doesn't matter what I do, then you've fallen off one edge of that razor line I've said. But there is in this story one last detail. One last detail of dissimilarity between these two homes that I think holds the key to keeping us on that narrow path. The narrow path of knowing on the one hand that we, all of us, I, Christian here, you and the best among us and the worst among us, every one of us are saved by God's grace. And what we do with what we hear Jesus say matters it's of the utmost importance. The thing that keeps us on that narrow ridge is this. Look at this detail. It's where the houses were built. One of them was built on rock, and the other was built on sand. This is tricky, but listen. These two men who built their houses did not build their foundations. Do you see that? The rock that made it so this man's house stood was there already before he started to build. He would be insane to think that he put the rock in the ground. He knew he didn't put it there. It was there already. The rock had been laid down for him to build upon. And my friends, the rock upon which you are meant to build your life has already been laid down. And that rock is Jesus Christ, the lover of your soul, the God of all, who descended all the way down because of how much he loves you. And he himself has descended so far down that he's gone underground, and he is the rock that is there now for you to build on, and you are free to do it. You are absolutely and altogether free to build your life on what he has already done for you. You are free, and I'll tell you, free is not a good word for it, but every one of you are able to choose not to build on what he's done. You may go off and build your house somewhere else. You may say, nice words, Jesus, and then go do something else, and then you will be a person who is building your house on sand, and it will fall. And the only thing great about you in the end will be the fall. And then on the other hand, every one of us, young and old, and everyone else in between, those who've got a great record in our past and those who have a miserable record in our past, those who are doing well right now and those of us who are not doing very well at this very moment, we are all equally free to build our lives, the ones we are dwelling in, on the rock that is Jesus Christ. because he gave himself for us in love. And I'll tell you that all of us are free and meant to choose this freedom. And it would be the very best thing for you and me and us as a church and for this world that we find ourselves in, to build these lives of ours, to build this life of ours as a church upon the rock that is Jesus Christ. And that is my final word for these sermons in this summer. And I hope now that you'll simply pray with me. My God, we thank you. We thank you for the words of Jesus Christ, the words that are challenging and comforting, the words that are clear, the words that are easy and the words that are difficult, the ones that make us feel comfortable and the ones that unsettle us. We thank you for his teaching and for the wisdom that he brought to us, for the way he shows us where true life is. But now, as we finish this summer of listening to his words, we thank you more than anything else for his acts, not just for the things he said, but for the things he did, and especially that one thing, that he would choose to become a man, live a real life, and then die a death for each one of us, that he would hand his life over, that he would lay it down so that there would be a rock for us to build our lives on. For that choice of his, God, we give you great thanks and praise. And we ask you that each of us would let everything in our paths go, and instead we would cling so desperately onto the cross of Christ, that we would leave everything for the sake of following him, and that following him we would have the true life that we were meant to have. And I pray this in the name of Jesus Christ, lover of our souls. Amen.